Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. Jeff, will we ever finish dissecting this Penn State-Ohio State game?
Yes. Michigan post-game, it will be over.
So until then, yes, we are still dissecting it. And you know what I'd like to hit up with you right now is a little bit of, why don't we dissect James Franklin's dissection of the game?
Yep.
Because I thought he hit a lot of interesting things in his press conference that I'd like to talk to you about. But before we get there, though, can we please establish that James Franklin's not going anywhere?
Yes, I think that is abundantly clear, and if it's not, it should be. And quite frankly, I think Penn State fans should be rejoicing in that fact. As I've said, I don't remember if I said it on our show earlier this week or not, but I've been saying to a bunch of people since the last Saturday that I think it is much more likely that if you brought a new coach in, and again, there is a 0% chance of that, but let's play out the hypothetical. You bring somebody else in, and I don't care, bring whoever you think is the guy in. I think it is much more likely that Penn State drops down a peg or two in the Big Ten standings than it is that they overtake Ohio State as the top dog. I just don't think it is likely at all that, again, no matter who you brought in, that you'll snap your fingers and then Penn State will be in better position to beat Ohio State than it is under James Franklin, or be in better position to consistently win the games it's supposed to, the way James Franklin has done, in particularly these last couple of seasons, but for the most part throughout his career. I think, as James Franklin said, I think you look at the totality, and yep, this is a part of that totality that rubs people the wrong way. And I understand it, and it should. It rubs James Franklin the wrong way, the 1-9 record against the Buckeyes. But if you sit back and look at the totality of the record and everything that's going on here, everything that had been going on here at Penn State, and you sit back and you look at the overall national picture, again, Penn State's in a pretty good place. And I just don't buy, I've seen a lot of the narrative this week is maybe this is just what Penn State is. This is what the ceiling is. I've been making the comparison on our local shows up here. You know, I heard that for years with Bill Cowher. Bill Cowher is, he's a good coach, but they're going to keep losing AFC championship games. Maybe once in a blue moon, they even win that, but they'll never win a Super Bowl with Bill Cowher. Well, year 14, with not one of his best teams, by the way, the Steelers go out and win the Super Bowl. I just don't buy every season is a different opportunity. James Franklin, I think, continues to upgrade the overall talent. I think he continues to make good decisions with the coaches he's bringing in. And I don't think there's anything guaranteed. I'm not sitting here telling you that the next 5 years Penn State will win every matchup with Ohio State. But listen, Jim Harbaugh was 0-5. Now he's 2-5. Many people think he's going to get to 3-5 against the Buckeyes. I just think you're much better off going with what you know you have. I think Penn State continues to trend overall in the right direction. And I just think it's foolish to even want somebody else at the helm right now, because I just don't think I think it would set the program back. Again, no matter who you brought in, these are James Franklin's guys right now. You're going to lose, I don't know what percentage, but you're going to lose a chunk of the talent that you have on board right now. And I just think, again, it's foolish to even be desiring that. And again, that being said, it's as James Franklin said, I think it's fair. You want more against Ohio State. You want to see Penn State getting into the Big Ten title game more than once every 7 or 8 years. All fair, all worthwhile goals. But again, it is a really tough conference. It's going to get tougher and better. And I just think Penn State, in the big picture here, is well positioned to at least remain in contention, remain a top 10 program on a consistent basis. And when you sit back and look at the overall picture, that's not a bad place to be in college football.
Well, Jeff, you brought up a good point about the, is that limit 10-2? A lot of folks, that's the narrative right now. But you brought up the example of Michigan, where that's what they were thought to be until they weren't anymore. But you could look around at a lot of other examples. Georgia was thought of that way until they weren't. Clemson was thought of that way until they weren't, when they got over the hump. And if you want to throw in, which I will, college basketball, one of the big Villanova for years and years and years. Remember, Jay Wright could not coach in the tournament. He couldn't win in the tournament. That was the case until he could.
Right. And listen, patience is not something that sports fans or human beings in general are known for. And I get it. And I don't know how patient you need to be. I get it. It's like, well, you know, 5 years, 10 years. The other thing I keep asking people is, you know, again, 1-9, everybody's going to agree, man, that's not good enough. We got to be winning more often against Ohio State. But if it was 3-7, are we sitting here rejoicing? And, oh, yeah, man, frankly, he's winning 3 out of every 10. That's good. If he's winning 4 out of every 10, is that good enough? Does it need to be 500? Does it need to be better than 500? Again, we agree 1-9 is not good enough. But if over the next decade, Penn State is 3-7 against the Buckeyes, again, are people going to be rejoicing? Man, he improved threefold over that first decade. Clearly, now Penn State is back. Again, you want to win every game. There are certain coaches, certain programs that have it rolling. And Ohio State is certainly one of them. Again, Ryan Day walked into a great situation. I wondered aloud at the time whether or not he could sustain what Ohio State had already established. I think that is a really hard thing to do. And to Ryan Day's credit, he has done it and then some. Again, the guy is not losing Big Ten conference games, period. Outside of Michigan, I mean, he is not losing in the conference. That's hard to do. Penn State, Iowa, all of these teams, again, different years, matchup-wise, it's amazing. I mean, and again, people don't want to do it, but every now and then you tip your cap, say, man, dude is doing great, doing a better job. But I think you keep plugging away, see if you can continue to learn, see if you can continue to improve. And hopefully one of these years you get the another breakthrough. And maybe after that breakthrough, again, it comes crashing down and you're able to sustain regular success. Yeah, I have no idea what's going to happen, how it'll play out. But I just think right now the best option for Penn State, the best chance Penn State has to get that breakthrough win or to even have a chance at sustained success against the Ohio States or the Michigans of the world is to stay the course with James Franklin and see what adjustments he can make moving forward.
Well, here's a couple things on that point, Jeff. The record against Ohio State makes nobody in Nittany Nation happy. The coaching staff, the players, the fans, nobody is happy about that. But there is a pecking order in college football, whether you like it or not. Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia right now I will set at a tier one. Is there anybody else who belongs with that group? I know Michigan the last 2 years, but is that enough to put them there? But you know every year Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia, the recruiting rankings show it. They get the best players, and for the last 8-10 years, that has been the case. And if you go to the Southeast Conference and you ask, you know, Florida or LSU or Ole Miss or Auburn or Texas A&M, go look at their record against Alabama. Now, I know their fan base isn't happy about it, but that's just the situation with those teams that are the best teams in the country, right, Jeff?
Yeah, I know. I think that's exactly right. And listen, I will throw a host of schools at you that, listen, they want to be in the national title mix as well. And at the moment, they're not, and they haven't been for a while. See Texas, see USC, see Texas A&M. So, listen, I get it. And when you're in one tier, if you want to call it that, and, you know, we'll say Penn State's in the second tier, if you're throwing, you know, and I would agree, it was Clemson, Alabama, maybe Ohio State. Now it's Georgia, Alabama, maybe Ohio State. And by the way, Georgia may be starting to slip out of that tier. We'll see how the rest of this season finishes up. But I don't know that Alabama's a lock to stay there here permanently. And again, I'm not predicting that they're going away. And their going away is, you know, two lost seasons in consecutive years or something. So, you know, again, a part of it is the expectation that is there for a given program. But man, there are a lot of schools, a lot of coaches that are, you know, also have high expectations, fan bases with high expectations, and they are nowhere near the consistently good that Penn State is. And I just, again, I think you sometimes get caught up in just looking at the at your team, and we're all guilty of it. I mean, I'm guilty of it when I look at my Steelers and stuff too, but I think every now and then you got to step back, look around and say, well, wait a second. You know, Penn State, yeah, it's not where fans want it to be. You want to be winning Big Ten titles. You want to be in national title contention on a regular basis, but man, literally knocking on the door of all of that. And one of the best programs, I mean, certainly one of the top three programs in the country in the James Franklin era, just happens to be in your division. That's kind of just a bad break being in the wrong place at the wrong time, if you want to look at it that way. But it's also an opportunity, again, to continue to try to grow and, you know, see if you can eventually break through.
Jeff, they say great minds think alike. Apparently so do ours, because when you started to name those other programs, USC, Texas, Texas A&M, they are literally the first three I have written down in doing this comparison. When we come back, I'm going to ask you, though, where does Penn State rank in the pecking order with national programs? We said Ohio State, Alabama, Georgia at the top. Just where exactly does Penn State fit? Jeff will answer when we get back.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff, I'm Jim. We're, I guess, essentially talking about the overreaction, not just locally with Penn State fans, but even nationally. I'm reading stories, and some of them are just incredible to me. And one of the statements that was made that I saw from a national writer, well, essentially Penn State fans have to understand they are somewhere in that 10 to 15 range as far as programs go. Okay, let's take a look at that. I think we agree Ohio State, Alabama, and Georgia, just the way they recruit. And I'm talking about where a program sits now. Go by history over the last few years, and then how they're set up for the future. So like Clemson, we know they're not where they were just a few years ago, so their program is going in that direction. Michigan, they're on the upswing after definitely being in that second tier after the last 2 years. We think they might be reaching that next level. So Like I said, National Writer put him somewhere between 10 and 15. Where do you think they are? Let me just throw some names out there for you so you could have just the perspective. If I put Ohio State, Alabama, Michigan, and Georgia as that top tier, the next level, I put names like USC, Texas, Texas A&M, Florida State, Clemson, LSU, Notre Dame, Florida, Oregon, Washington. I think there's no doubt Penn State's part of that group. Are they behind any of those programs?
Yeah, I think, you know, it depends, again, at the criterion that you're using. If you kind of go from 2016 to now with more emphasis on the last, you know, let's say coming out of the pandemic, 2021 to now, to me, Penn State is definitively a top 10 program. And I think the argument is kind of, I think you could put them as high as number six. Again, looking at the 2016 to right now time frame with a little more heavy emphasis over the last three, and then obviously Penn State's case, it would be the last 2 years. I think Penn State, no question, is behind Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State, Michigan. I think probably pretty definitively behind Oklahoma, although in terms of winning big games, and that's something else I want to get into here, Jim, because one of the things that we look at here is, you know, record in those big games. Fine, but how many big game opportunities are there for some of these other teams? When Washington made its playoff run in 2016, when Penn State fans thought the Nittany Lions should get in over Washington, there is, I don't think anybody anywhere that disputes, Penn State had the tougher schedule that year, right? Like, I mean, there's no debate about that. Well, if you don't have to play an Ohio State and a Michigan each year, a la Alabama, listen, Nick Saban's record would be great. There's no question. But you don't think there'd be a couple more dings in there if he had to play Kirby Smart and the Bulldogs every year, or vice versa, Kirby Smart and the Bulldogs would have a couple more dings in there? Obviously, one of them would. Now, I don't know whether Alabama would have beaten Georgia consistently or the other way around, or they would have split. But something would have happened there where one of those teams is losing. And does that change the perception we have nationally? They'd still both be top-tier programs. I'm not arguing that. What I'm saying is the perception is, man, they were just almost unbeatable. Well, they didn't play each other. Now, Ohio State, to its credit, right? I mean, that is what to me makes Ohio State even all the more impressive is, yes, Ohio State beat Notre Dame this year. Ohio State is playing Penn State and Michigan each year. And to their credit, again, much more often than not, they are coming through and winning those big games in the conference and outside consistently. So my point is, again, I think the thing that James Franklin gets knocked for most often is also the thing that a lot of these other coaches aren't having to worry about with nearly the frequency that James Franklin is. And it's different when you get that opportunity in a playoff game versus a regular season game in Ann Arbor or in Columbus or even at Beaver Stadium against these teams that are consistently ranked in the top 10 or top 5, really, over the last few years. So, you know, to me, yes, Penn State is right there on that next tier. And I would agree that they, you know, over that time period have not been what Clemson has been, what Georgia has been more recently, what Michigan has been more recently, what Ohio State has consistently been. Again, Oklahoma has not had the schedule. I want to see what Oklahoma does in the SEC. Maybe they'll go out and continue to have sustained success. That could be the case. Let's see, though, when they have an SEC schedule where they're playing, and let's see what that schedule looks like. But let's, you know, for the moment, imagine that they are playing at least either Alabama or Georgia every year. And then, you know, throw in the LSUs and the Floridas and the, you know, road games in some of those tougher venues. And again, we'll see if Oklahoma doesn't get dinged a couple of times instead of the consistent 11-1 or 12-0 records. To me, that's part of taking a look at the big picture stuff. I think, to me, there's no question Penn State is top eight. I think you could quibble whether they're six, seven, or eight, depending on what criterion you're going to use. But I think in the James Franklin era, and in particular from 2016 to now, to me, it's not disputable that Penn State's a top 10 program in terms of the consistency. To me, the question is, all right, exactly where do you peg them, six, seven, or eight? And if it's eight, again, that's still, you're talking about seven programs in the entire country that are doing a better job. And by the way, I keep reading that, you know, the narrative is you're paying him $6.5 million a year. You got to produce better than this. That $6.5 million, just so we're clear, that makes James Franklin the 11th highest paid coach. You could easily argue, and I would, that you're getting more value for your money with James Franklin and Penn State, certainly than like Texas A&M is getting for Jimbo Fisher, for example. But I mean, again, you are, I think, clearly one of the top eight programs, and you have the 11th highest paid coach. I'm not arguing to pay James Franklin more. Don't misunderstand what my argument is here. But I'm just saying, if you're going to keep throwing the monetary figure up, then you got to look at it big picture. And again, to me, that argument is that, oh, yeah, you're actually winning more than what you should given the pay scale.
Jeff, you continue to steal my thunder. I was going to react. If you think James Franklin's overpaid, go talk to a Texas A&M fan. They would have an interesting reaction to it. And you also make a great point where Penn State and Ohio State and Michigan all have to play each other, and that's a guarantee every year. You could talk about Alabama and Georgia in the same conference, but they're not in the same division, and the SEC sets it up so they don't have to play each other in the regular season. You know, credit to the SEC commissioner or whoever makes their schedule that says, hey, we're going to do our best to get as many playoff teams as possible to get them there. We learned a lesson in the four-team playoff. You can't lose two games. You cannot lose two games and make the playoff. No team has, and I don't think any team will this year, and that'll be the end of it because you're going to the 12-team playoff. So I think we're both in agreement. Now, still, this whole reaction to last week's game, we're fans. We're fanatics. That's the nature of it, is to overreact to a small sample size. The other overreaction to this one that I caught, Jeff, is this Penn State is just a bad team. Well, what I find fascinating is if we could agree Ohio State is one of the top teams in the country and you went into their stadium and lost by one score, you could talk about how ugly the game was. I don't care. But you had an elite defense, and the reaction is just Penn State is not very good. But what I find fascinating is when you come out of a score 20-12, you're a bad team. But when Oklahoma played Texas, it was 34-30. When Washington played Oregon, it was 36-33. Did anyone come out of that saying, boy, these teams can't play defense?
Well, and what about Oklahoma beating Central Florida by 2 points? That part I honestly don't understand, and I did read several articles where it's like, yeah, the game was relatively close, but there's clearly a gulf between Penn State and these top-tier programs. And I'm going back and I'm watching that game, and it's like, well, if that scoop and score stands, and I get it, it didn't. That's part of the game. I understand. But it sure felt like Penn State had a real shot at winning that game if that stands. That was one play, and it happened. And again, there was a call made, and justifiable call, whatever, fine. But if one play could get you the win on the road against a higher-ranked team, I don't understand how you then turn around and say, yeah, it was fairly close, but I mean, there's a gulf. It's a wide gap there between Ohio State and Penn State. How do you figure that? I mean, I genuinely don't understand the logic there. That it does not make any sense. And, you know, let's see how the season plays out. I've also on our local programs up here have been pointing out, you know, everybody has assumed in Penn State fandom that this team is going to go at least 10-2. And I think to feel not disappointed, not that the season's a failure, but to not be disappointed, this team has to go 11-1. Well, I'm telling you right now, this team could end up 9-3. That game at Maryland is certainly ripe with potential for an upset victory for the Terrapins and a really tough day for the Nittany Lions and their fans. Obviously, Michigan is a team that is capable of beating, and many are presuming will beat Penn State. It is also possible, dear boys and girls, and I know nobody seems to be able to wrap their head around this, it is possible, as we sit here right now, that Penn State wins the national championship this year. Well, if that happens, how many folks are going to go back and rewrite their columns coming out of the Ohio State game? Oh, Ironhead, you're crazy. There's no chance. Really? Because I've been watching this defense pretty closely, and I think this is a championship caliber defense. And I think Drew Aller does have the ability to get things on track here to give Penn State a shot against anybody in the country.
All right, Jeff, we're going to pick it up from that point because I'd like to respond to that. I will do that at the start of quarter number three.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. We are just kind of wrapping up some of this conversation post-Penn State, Ohio State. And I guess it's typical of the overreaction to it, Jeff, but I want to throw a thought out to you. You were putting out there about how Oklahoma, they're still undefeated, seem to be on that path to the college playoffs, and they barely beat UCF this past weekend. And Penn State, I'm going to put it this way, and this is a positive spin. This is someone wearing the blue and white glasses, Jeff. But the fact is, Penn State could not have played worse on offense if they tried, okay? You can't, 0 for your first 15 on third down, that's impossible. Impossible. Could not have. Drew Aller played easily his worst game. I think Mike Yurcich had easily his worst game calling plays for Penn State. All of that happened, and they lost by one score. Is that crazy of me to point that out?
No, I think it's one of the things that I think is worth pointing out is if Penn State and Ohio State were to meet again, and I know Penn State's fans shudder at the prospect, but do you really think Penn State would not improve on the 1-for-16 and the one coming, you know, basically in garbage time on third down conversions? And if that happens, if they get three or four more first downs, do you not think Penn State has a shot of winning that game? They had a shot at winning it again, as it was. If that scoop and score stands, they are, I mean, right there at the end of the game, and who knows how it ultimately plays out. So, yeah, I think it is legitimate that Penn State definitely had a bad game against Ohio State. We've talked many times. There isn't a team in the country that doesn't have a game or two along the way where like, ah, man, just don't have it today. And you hope either it comes against lesser competition or you just find a way to grind out the win on that given day. And I think for Penn State, you know, looking at the glass half full perspective, This offense and Drew Aller have been much different, much better at home than they have on the road. Well, the Michigan game is at Beaver Stadium. The only true road game remaining is Maryland, and then you have, you know, a home game that's more of a neutral field, and I think will be a Penn State fan-intensive Ford Field for the Michigan State matchup. So, you know, again, from the glass half full perspective, listen, if Drew Aller is completing 70% of his passes against Michigan, the way he has against Iowa and West Virginia this season, do I think Penn State has a shot against Michigan with this defense? Yeah. Am I going to sit here and guarantee a Nittany Lion victory? No. Definitely not doing that. But yeah, I think Penn State has a real legitimate shot to pull off that win. And again, if Penn State does that, you'll still need some help. You need to, you know, Michigan to turn around and beat Ohio State. I get it. You've taken the control of your own destiny out of the equation here. But as we sit here right now, yeah, Penn State is still very much in the national title hunt. And I'll go a step further, Jim, because I keep hearing the, well, you couldn't have watched that game and think that Penn State is truly a national title contender. Well, I watched Georgia play Auburn, kids. And do I think Penn State could beat the Georgia team that played against Auburn that day? Yeah. Yeah, I do. Michigan is the only team to me that has consistently looked like a top tier program. Guess what? Do you know how many top 25 teams Michigan has played to this point? Let's see. That would be zero. No top 25 opponents. Well, yeah, they've looked very impressive against not ranked competition. And everybody else has had at least a game where you're like, ooh, I don't know if that team really belongs in the national title picture. So, yes, do I think it is conceivable Penn State could beat Michigan and then go to the playoffs and beat any of the teams there? Yeah, I think it's possible.
Well, and I'll also point out 2016 when Penn State got embarrassed by Michigan in Ann Arbor and then came back and beat Ohio State at home. All right, it's time for me, Jeff, to take off the blue and white glasses. That positive spin, and I'm going to go back to what I promised when we started the show. Let's dissect James Franklin and his press conference, and I'm not going to be quite as kind with this. I want you to react to a couple things that he said, because I know my reaction. When he was asked about bringing Bo Prabhula into play, and I know you were an advocate before the game, we're going to see Bo Prabhula. My take watching that game was, what's going on is not working. If you got another option, give it a shot. And James Franklin said something to the effect of, because of our lack of production on third down, it limited the things we wanted to do. We didn't have to get the rhythm that would allow us to bring in Bo Prabhula. Well, isn't it the fact that you had no rhythm on offense the reason why you would want to bring Bo Prabhula in?
Yeah, because I think you're looking at just creating some positive yards there on first and second, and it seems more likely with Prabhula. That being said, I will say, Jim, Ohio State's defensive line and linebacking core was doing a very effective job. We'll never know, obviously, how that game would have turned out had Prabhula been in there with any consistency or even for a series. I actually do not subscribe to the notion that, well, man, if he had been in there, then look out. Penn State's offense would have kicked into high gear and the Nittany Lions would have won that game. I don't discount the possibility. I do think Prabhula is such a different quarterback, and I do think the aggression that Ohio State was showing defensively would have had to have slowed down a little bit because of the running threat that Prabhula brings. But I will also say there is a reason. I mean, we're not in practice, but there is a reason that Prabhula is number two on the depth chart and Aller is number one. And I suspect a big part of it is decision-making. And the one thing Penn State could not do in that game is turn the ball over. And you know, again, we'll never know. I can sit here and hypothesize that if, you know, Prabula would have turned the ball over a couple of times. I have no idea. Maybe he gets a couple of touchdowns and wins it. I am not one of those that is sitting here, even though I did want to see Prabula in there for a series. I thought it would have just been a neat mix of offense in that first half. And yeah, as the game went on, I mean, yes, I am sitting here on my couch saying, my gosh, let Prabula get a shot. Let Aller just take a series and watch from the sideline. But I don't know either way, and none of us do, whether or not that actually would have made any difference in the outcome. It may have made things worse ultimately. And I get the, well, it's worth a shot. And I'm saying it during the game. I mean, I'll say I'm trying to step back now and look at it. You know, it's one of those, it's yes, put Prabula in, and then he throws in an interception. It's like, well, my God, why would you let him throw? Why did you put him in the game? Or if he fumbles the ball and somebody's coming from behind, right? Like, you watch something until it's out there and then you see it. And again, we'll never know. Maybe Prabula would have been the spark and led Penn State to the victory. But I think it's also a distinct possibility that he goes out there and makes a couple of mistakes, or not even, again, just because of the nature of his play, put and him being in more vulnerable positions with the way Ohio State was attacking defensively, that you get a turnover or two along the way.
Well, I'll go further, though, in advocating for Bo Prabula to go in the game. This was a game Drew Aller didn't have it. There's no other way to put it, Jeff. He didn't have it. And you were failing time after time after time. You saw that. I think you could, I don't want to say it was conclusive that you weren't going to score with Drew Aller, but you kind of felt this offense wasn't doing anything. Bo Prabula, he changes, it changes up. Would it change it for the better? Don't know. Might have changed it for the worse, but it would have changed it because you got a completely different style going on. I've always felt the fact that they have shown they will not let Drew Aller run the ball on a read option. I think this is why some of those late games where Trey Potts looks better, because the defense is focused on Bo Prabula running the ball. Yeah. Would Bo Prabula being out there maybe have helped Catron Allen or Nick Singleton, because the focus of the defense would have changed? The way things were going in that game, Ohio State's defense was kicking Penn State's offense's butt in that style. Change the style then. Change it and see what happens. At what point, what do you have to lose at that point? And the other thing I want to mention is James Franklin has threatened to bring Bo Prabula in the game time after time after time. If not now, when? To me, right now, it was just a bluff.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. And again, I wanted to see him in before the 0-4 third downs. I mean, I really would have liked to have seen him in there in that second or third series, just with, again, a scripted group of plays, some misdirection where you get the running backs and or receivers kind of going different ways and Prabula, and you got to figure out where the ball is. Again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you definitively that, man, if they had done that, Penn State wins the game. Yes, I mean, if you're asking me, if you put truth serum in me, and do I think things would have fared better on Saturday with Prabula in there, at least for, you know, a couple of series over the course of that game. Yeah, I do. I think they moved the ball a little bit more. Do I have great faith that they would have moved it enough and been consistent enough to get the offensive production to put more points on the board? I'm not as convinced that that would have been the result.
Okay, Jeff, there were a couple more questions for James Franklin. One of them was about the T formation and the quarterback sneak, the tush push, and why we didn't see it. When we come back for quarter four, forget James Franklin and his opinion, Mike Yurcich, the experts, the coaches, the guys with experience. I'm going to ask the one guy who could give us the definitive answer of whether it would make a difference or not. That, of course, is my good friend Jeff Byers. He's going to tell us if they should have gone into that T formation or not. Come back and we'll get Jeff's answer.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
And welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. And we're having the conversation now about James Franklin's media meeting earlier this week, Jeff, and reacting to a few things. One of the questions that came up was about not using the T formation, which they've been pretty successful with, or even the quarterback sneak on those short yardage situations. It actually sounded like James Franklin may not have been too happy with Mike Yurcich going away from that. Now, he's not going to go out and out critical Mike Yurcich was making a mistake, but he did seem to say we went away from things that we've been successful with. What do you say?
Yeah, I think it was one of the many, many things that were puzzling about Penn State's offensive game plan or seeming lack thereof. It did not make any sense to me that they didn't have that, given the success they've had. Again, I'm not going to sit here and tell you, if they had done that, guaranteed Penn State goes out and wins the game, gets those first downs. But, yeah, do I think I like those odds better than what happened on Saturday? You bet. And I think it was so disturbing as a following this team to see what they did and didn't do offensively, given what they had been doing all season. And, I get that some of the weaknesses that we thought might be there showed up and were there, but some of the strengths that we saw and that I think are still there, we didn't see on display against Ohio State. And that, to me, is odd. Just real quick, Jim, I did one thing just occurred to me that I don't think I mentioned on our show with, and I don't know this, and Franklin obviously didn't mention it, so I may be reaching here, but one of the things that we talked about, I think, after the West Virginia game was the number of high snaps in that game, and Aller did a great job of containing and grabbing the football. There were I didn't go back and count, Jim, but it had to be double-digit low snaps in this game. And I mean low. Like, Aller had to really make a heck of a play just to get the ball. And that does throw off your timing. I'm not sitting here telling you that that's the sole reason either. Again, there are a bunch of things that contributed. And I'm not in practice, and I don't know, but it is one thing I had jotted down and I did not think of when we were talking about Probola. I don't know if Probola has more trouble than Aller handling those low snaps. I don't know if it's something they saw consistently in practice during the week. I just throw it out there as a possibility, and I don't know that Franklin would or wouldn't mention it if it was. I don't know that they necessarily want to be pointing out to opponents that, hey, we're really having trouble with the snaps. So again, maybe I'm reaching there. I have no idea, obviously. I am not one of those on the beat. I am never at practice. I have no idea. Maybe Probola is better at handling the low snaps. But, I mean, it was a consistent problem on Saturday against Ohio State. And, you know, I know fans get tired of it, and it's, okay, he doesn't turn the ball over, but we need him to make plays. I am telling you, there are a lot of quarterbacks where there would have been four or five at least balls on the ground. And if you lose a couple of those, again, you do get steamrolled by Ohio State. That's not a 20-12 game at the end.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up because I took notice of that, and I was surprised during the broadcast. I don't think the announcers ever mentioned that, and it did happen consistently. But I think it also points out, Jeff, if you're trying to pinpoint something wrong with this offense, I'm going to start with Drew Aller because he's the quarterback. He's got to take the heat, and he said it himself. He played poorly. He knows it. I don't think we're going to see that kind of performance from him again, no matter where. But the offensive line didn't play their best game. I think it's also worth pointing out that that's the third string left guard there. Our good friend Landon, you know, how much difference would he have made being out there? JB Nelson also out. The wide receivers didn't do their part. I'm laying a lot of this, though, on the coaching staff. I don't think they put themselves in the position to succeed and help, you know, Drew Aller to succeed and the whole offense. The other part to this, though, questions that came up is getting away from the running game. James Franklin, and he rightfully pointed out, hey, the 42 passes, but there were 20 of them in the fourth quarter. I get it. I understand. But Nick Singleton is one of the great playmakers in the country. Nine carries, Jeff.
Yeah, and he had a couple of really good ones in there. And, you know, I know Penn State wasn't getting a ton of yards on the ground, but Ohio State wasn't either, and Ohio State kept plugging away with it. And again, I keep coming back to, I don't know that any one of these things necessarily gives Penn State the win. I mean, I'm not sitting here telling you if you give Singleton 15 carries, then look out. There's no way the Buckeyes would have won that game. I don't think anybody's saying any of these things, you know, putting Preboola in there, doing this, doing that, in and of itself solves the issues or definitively wins the game. But to me, it's more, why not try this stuff? And in many cases, we're talking about stuff that has been successful. Penn State has been good at running the football consistently, getting some tough yards. The T formation has worked consistently. Preboola, when he has been in there this season, has very consistently moved the offense, has looked good at what he's doing. You know, I just, the lack of seemingly any creativity with the offensive game plan, to me, is the biggest frustration and the biggest mystery of that game. And in particular, Jim, I mean, I hate to keep going back to it, but I don't know how you don't. They had a month, in my opinion, they had 1 month to get ready for this game. This was the game. I get you don't overlook anybody. It's UMass. You can overlook UMass. You've got to be getting ready for this game. You had, you know, 2 weeks to get ready for UMass, another week. This game should have been, this game plan, to me, we should have been afterwards saying, wow, even if they lost the game, it's like, man, that was a cool wrinkle. Hope we see that again. Oh, that was neat that they played off the different receiver routes that way. We hadn't seen that before. Oh, man, that misdirection when they put Preboola in the backfield there. Hadn't thought of that. Singleton and Preboola, and then the pitch to Preboola, and then he fakes it to Singleton and keeps it and throw. I mean, how we didn't have anything, I guess perhaps other than the Keandre Lambert-Smith pitch and desire to throw down the field, but we had seen that before. I don't understand the lack of originality, creativity, trying to use different pieces in different ways. And again, you just need to look to the other side of the ball. Look at the different schemes that Manny Diaz continues to came up with in that game. And they're just, again, at least didn't appear to be any of that or anything even close to it on the offensive side of the ball.
And Jeff, you know, I'm a layperson. I'm not a football coach, didn't play organized football. I get that. However, football is not rocket surgery here, Jeff, okay? It's not that complicated if you get some of it explained to you. We had someone on our show from For the Bloggy who explained the T formation and its progress through the 2022 season. totally fascinating. And what was so fascinating was showing how it progressed through the year. At the start of the season, they were just running a quarterback sneak out of it. Then they had the, we'll run either left or right, depending on what the defense was doing, because we have two really good running backs and put a tight end back there essentially as a fullback and a lead blocker. That was the next development. The next development was, I believe they showed it first against Ohio State, where now we are going to motion out of that T formation because the defense overloaded with big guys because they've seen this before. Penn State's definitely going to run the ball. All of a sudden, a diamond to the formation to the left and Tyler Warren to the right, and we're going to see what the defense does. And it was Ohio State. They had a linebacker trying to cover Tyler Warren one-on-one on fourth and one, and they threw the ball out of it successfully. And there was another play, again, Ohio State, where based on the formation, Sean Clifford was going to keep the ball and run. And I will remember Ohio State frantically called the timeout. They were on their heels. Penn State was doing what they did not expect them to do. And I still to this day remember Sean Clifford kind of slamming the ball to his fist because you could tell he knew we had them on this play. Now, I'm just using that as an example of that creativity. And every game you're doing more and a little different off the same formation. Where was that kind of thinking, that kind of you're controlling the narrative, Jeff, in this game?
Yeah, and I do think that was a big part of the problem for Penn State on Saturday is they were letting Ohio State dictate the game, dictate the pace, dictate what the offense was doing instead of putting Ohio State into some disadvantageous positions, or at least put them in positions where it's like, oh man, I don't know what's coming. I don't know where the ball is. I don't know that you needed to go, you know, crazy here with just every play has to be a gimmick or a completely different look. But man, they have such a diverse skill set with the players on offense. And, you know, again, I get it's a first-year starter at quarterback, but it's a really talented first-year starter at quarterback, and everybody says he has a high football IQ. Let's see it. Let's test it a little bit. Let's let him go out there. And, yeah, you know what? We're going to pick apart this Ohio State defense. If they give us this look, well, it just felt like all day long it was Ohio State. Nope, we're not letting you do this. And Penn State was like, oh, man, we're screwed. And that's what it felt like. It's like, I realize I'm oversimplifying it, and I'm sure there was some things out there that we weren't picking up on or didn't see that were being tried. But man, I do think it is accurate to say that was not one of the more creative offensive game plans we've seen here at Penn State.
It definitely was not that, Jeff. It will be interesting, and I'm not sure it matters what they do against Indiana, but I at least want to see them do other things. I want them to say, you know what we've been doing, it really didn't work when a big game came in. We need to make some adjustments. Jeff, yeah. Unfortunately, that is it. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Hey guys, this is Andrew from 409 Tailgate Club, here to talk to you about our new coffee barbecue dry rub set. Over the years, we've developed some great tailgate sauces and barbecue dry rubs, but our new coffee rubs are totally unique spice blends, low in sodium, and feature Happy Valley's finest coffee, W.C. Clark's, roasted right in the cheese shop in downtown State College. So head on over to 409tailgateclub.com, grab yourself some coffee rubs, and remember, always tailgate with honor. We are.